Let's get now to my good friend Fevzi Turkalp. Fevzi, thank you very much for coming on here.
Hello, Howard. Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you, Fevzi. It's been so long since we last spoke.
I've missed you terribly.
Well, no, I miss you, because you are a fellow Gemini. I mean, this is for hour three, really, but we kind of think alike. And Geminis have this great tendency, I think, to be very forward-looking. So it's not surprising that you and I are both into gizmos, gadgets and technology, really, is it?
No, it's inevitable.
Well, it is inevitable. Now, look, for those who've never heard you before, you are known online as the Gadget Detective. Your website, let's get it out there up front at the beginning, is gadgetdetective.com. Tell me about you, because to do what you do, you are very qualified.
I studied a degree in applied physics, started playing with very big computers the size of football stadiums, and then as the devices got smaller, it all got more interesting. And I sort of left the programming of large computers and just started learning about gadgets and what they could do. And I think, to be honest, it was always going to be thus. As a child, I was that kid who would take apart the record player to see how it worked and take apart just about everything in our house to see how it worked. And I learned a lot, but we ended up with a lot of debris. I could never ever put anything back together again, particularly in those days, because they were sort of mechanical and springs and things like that.
I think you know that I'm from Liverpool, and my dear grandmother from Waterloo, my granddad, whose middle name I share, he was a great one for doing exactly what you did. And my grandmother always used to tell the story about him. God rest his soul. She said, I'll never forget when he repaired a watch, and she used to have the bits in a drawer. She said, by the end of it, we had two watches. So I can completely understand that.
It was just fascinating. You know, I used to watch, I mean, you're obviously too young to remember, but those old Danset record players where you'd have a stack of records on a spike and it would drop one at a time, play it, the needle would lift up, get out of the way, another record would drop. I mean, how smart was that in the 60s, you know? So it sort of started then. And it just continued. And one day I heard someone on the radio doing a particularly bad job, and I rang up and I said, you know, that was terrible. And they said, well, I suppose you could do better. And I said, well, yes, I suppose I could. And that was about 15 years ago.
I forgave you for that phone call.
Sorry about that.
I'm glad that you talked about record players, because if I can take you, God, we're only a few minutes into this and I'm already taking you down cul-de-sacs. But vinyl. This last month has shown that vinyl sales, if I'm right about this, have stripped and exceeded downloads at the back end of this year. What is going on?
Yeah, so vinyl is kind of... There's a reason why lots of people sort of didn't want to give up their vinyl. And, you know, it's a medium that you can hold, big gatefold sleeves, pictures, you know, inserts, you know, picture discs, all that sort of thing, and you just don't get that with CD. And the thing is, it's just a retro kick. I'm not sure that I mean, it will always be around, just in the way that there will be some people who always should take photos with film. It won't be the mainstream. Yes, you know, there is a fashion for it now. I don't believe that it will be, you know, huge numbers, but again, it's different, because vinyl is something that you buy, whereas music now is increasingly something that we subscribe to. So be it a Spotify subscription or Amazon Music subscription, or, you know, Apple Music, any of those things. We're moving away from this idea, on the one hand, where music is something that, A, has a physical medium, you know, be it a CD or a record or a tape or whatever it is. That idea is going. And also the idea that we own individual pieces of music anymore is going, and now what we have is subscriptions that give us access for the duration of the subscription. And I kind of think that the vinyl thing is a little bit of a rebellion against that, so that we're sort of heading in two directions at once. The dominant trend is the subscription model, because, you know, frankly, it's amazingly convenient to have access to a huge library of music wherever you go, be it on your smartphone or your tablet or your PC or almost any device. You can access huge amounts of music. And the clever thing about that, I guess, is the findability of that. So if they do it right, if they curate those collections well, you should be able to come across new tracks that you will enjoy and not just disappear down a cul-de-sac of, you know, oh, well, I like the Beatles, here's another Beatles album. But just to, you know, branch a little bit out into, let's say, ELO, and then out and out and out and out. So by the use of these technologies, we should also find that actually our musical tastes could broaden if it was done correctly. But the vinyl thing, you know, I've still got all my vinyl, still got record player. My nephew bought a record player the other day. I mean, you know, he's in his 20s.
And if you've ever set one of those up, I used to be an expert on buying a cartridge with a stylus.
Yes.
And using an alignment protractor and doing it dead right so you got no distortion. I still think they sound great. Too much hassle, I think, by the standards today. But I've got stuff on vinyl in the garage that they'll probably never release on digital. One question, just before, the way we're going to do this is we're going to look back at 2016, forward to 2017. We'll do that in the next segment here. But just fascinated by this music thing, because a lot of people are. It's very hard still to translate your collection into the digital domain. There was a great device that was released, I think, probably 7 or 8 years ago. It was around for a few years. For all I know, it may still be around, called the Brennan. You remember the Brennan?
Yeah, still around. They still sell it.
Yep. Well, no, that's a great idea, but I wonder why you don't see more of those things that allow you, essentially, to put your entire music collection on a massive hard drive for you to reference however and whenever you like.
Yeah. So the Brennan, for those that don't know, was an all-in-one box. So you could do this thing called ripping the copying of, say, CDs and other discs into a digital format, which could then reside, as you say, on a hard drive or indeed in the cloud. And you could always do that with a computer, but it was kind of tricky, particularly with, you know, but with the Brennan, it's an all-in-one box. It's very sort of simple. You just, you know, press a button, in goes the CD, automatically copies it off onto the next one, and you could do your whole collection over a period of time that way. And that's great. I mean, it's quite an expensive solution for what it is, but I guess you're paying for the simplicity. So if you're not up for the computer-based solution, as it were, then this is effectively a dedicated computer, and that's all it does, and it does it well. But it is quite pricey. But the Brennan's still around. They've sort of incrementally improved it over the years. But I think, you know, again, it's this thing. Okay, well, you've got it on one device there, but the big thing here is the cloud. And actually, I think this is one of the uses of the cloud that I do support, because you know, because you and I have spoken before about this, I always have concerns about our privacy and our security when we store things in the cloud. And yes, you are giving away some information because you're sharing your musical tastes, which I suppose says a fair bit about us one way or another. But having said that, you know, these are not private conversations or private photos. These are published pieces of music. And therefore, it's a good thing to be able to put those into cloud for most people, because then instead of having to have a huge database copied to every device that you use and then synchronize across all the devices, you just have it up in the cloud, which is another way of saying on a server in the internet, connected to the internet, and all your devices can access it. And that works because not only because cloud storage has got cheaper and cheaper, but also internet access has become more ubiquitous. We are on the point of this having sort of this pan access to the internet, that it will be, you know, in the car, whole cities will have access to it. As you walk around, you'll maintain your access, and not just necessarily, you know, 4G and so forth. You know, it will be faster and better and everywhere. And at that point, it really makes sense to have cloud-based music collections.
But you and
not
I
just
both
ones that you've curated. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not just,
yeah,
here's my record collection.
More of an intuitive music collection. You and I will talk some more about this at another time, but it is fascinating. It is the way things are going, but I do worry about security, which will lead us into the next segment of our conversation here, where we talk about 2016, and we'll start by looking at some of the things that have happened that the companies behind them would never have wanted to happen during 2016. I'm talking about hacking and that kind of stuff, which we've discussed here before. Fevzi Turkalp is the Gadget Detective. His website is gadgetdetective.com. We are here on The Unexplained at Talk Radio. My name is Howard Hughes, and we are across the UK on digital radio, DAB. We're also online at talkradio.co.uk. Stay right there on this New Year's Eve.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Unexplained New Year Special with Howard Hughes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Happy New Year from Howard Hughes and the team at The Unexplained. That's Ed on the controls tonight. And my producer, the long-suffering Emma Corsham, without whom none of this would be possible. We're talking with Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective, and we're going to look back now, finally, after our long preamble talking about music and our record collections, about the state of 2016, the things that happened, and some of those things that happened in 2016 were unintended and were not very nice. And, of course, one of the biggest things, Fevzi, was bad news for Yahoo, because they're in the process of doing this deal to be taken over by Verizon, communication giant. But we get one in short succession, not one, but two hacking scandals, and one of them affecting 500,000 people, another one affecting a billion people, we are told. You know, on many aspects of these two things, I have the odd Yahoo address. I am still not much the wiser. Nor a good year for them.
No, and as you say, because they'd all but done the deal to sell the business, and I think the first hacking scandal, I'm told, knocked about $1 billion off the price that the purchasers were prepared to pay, and I dread to think what this hack will do. And it's quite right, you know, because a business's value is certainly an email business, and a business that, you know, provides email accounts as well as other services. You know, its value has to be predicated upon the security of the service that it provides. And unfortunately, you know, Yahoo's not unique, but it seems to be, dare I say, uniquely bad. I mean, everyone gets hacked from time to time, but they've turned it into an art form. And the fact that they didn't even know that it was the investigation into to the first discovered hack that led them to understand that there was an even bigger pre-existing hack. And it just seems like it's become a public thoroughfare through their servers. Mm. You know, people. The problem is, of course, that when people do hack computers, they often leave what are known as back doors, which are, you know, as you can imagine, ways for other people and other programs to access. So, you know, they could quite literally have become a public thoroughfare. And the reason why it's particularly important that they're an email provider is that if someone's email address and password has been hacked and that they haven't stored it properly, if that is indeed the case, then it means potentially that all those email accounts have been insecure for a number of years. And that could mean, for example, that someone could have decided not to change your email address, but just monitor your emails and get lots of information about your online banking and so forth. So if you didn't understand how someone managed to hack your bank account or your credit cards or something, that could well be it. So if you have a Yahoo account and if you want to keep it, then at the very least change the password. I would recommend create a new email account and move away from that Yahoo one. It's your choice whether you go to another Yahoo one
but
not.
Isn't Fevzi, isn't that closing the door after the, you know, the horse has bolted the stable door?
Very much it is. I mean, really, you know, they should have known earlier and they should have told us earlier, but they didn't, and we are where we are, and now that you know that there is this weakness, at least, you know, unfortunately, it could be that the horses are continuing to bolt and have been bolting for some years, and at least we will stem the tide, to mix one's metaphors. Can you stem a tide of horses? I don't know.
Well, I think in this case you probably can.
I probably just have. So it is worth doing, but I have to say that when I've been giving advice to people about a choice of email address, Yahoo hasn't been at the top of my list of recommendations for quite some time, because there have been concerns about security with Yahoo in the past already, and this is just, you know, adding fuel to the fire.
And look, let's be fair to them, because we have to, and that's in my nature too, if they're willing to come on here and talk with me about this. But I have to say this, and Yahoo, if you're listening, and we will try and get in touch with you, because I would love to talk with you about this. They, first of all, I don't think have indicated too well exactly who's been affected. If it's a billion people, that's a hell of a lot of people. That must be a huge slice of their customer base. So yeah. I think they need to be a little bit clearer on that. I think some of the things that have said have been a bit sort of disingenuous, if that's the word. And the other thing being, you know, what are they doing about it? They're not really telling us, unless I've missed the news release that says that, what they are doing about this. Apart from mea culpa, I'm very sorry, and here are some facts and stats about it. they're not really telling us very much about how they are closing that stable door.
Yeah. No, look, I think the point is this. A billion is a big number, and we know that that's not the full extent of it because there have been other hacks and, you know, other email addresses and other accounts have been affected. I would just very strongly say to anyone who's got a Yahoo account or who has ever had one and may still, even if they don't use it, assume that yours has been hacked. Because if there was a billion out there that they didn't know about, then there could be another billion that they don't know about. I mean, even if they're being completely honest and forthright on the basis of what they know, it's almost certainly incomplete. And therefore, you know, as a Yahoo user, you have to assume that your account has been affected, which means you have to change your password. And I would seriously give consideration to shutting that email account altogether. As I say, it's your choice whether you go back to Yahoo, whether you have sufficient trust in them to do that. But the point is this, if the email address is dead, then they can't use it to try and access you know, other services. The problem comes like this. If someone has got access to your email address, the contents of the emails that arrive into that inbox, by virtue of the fact they've got the email address and the password, if they have both those things, then they can go to all the popular websites that you may or may not have used and just go to the page, and there are, you know, bots, programs that do this. They don't do it manually, but it goes to, you know, Amazon, all the major banks, all the major retailers everywhere, and it goes to the bit where it says, I've forgotten my password. And they say, no problem, we will email you a reset code. So and if they happen upon, let's say, you know, most people, for example, have got an Amazon account, or it could be any other website, but, you know, they get lucky, a reset code gets sent to your email address, which they have access to. They then reset that password, locking you out of that account and allowing themselves continuing access to that account. So they can bring down your website, they can steal the money from your bank account, they can access your credit card details, because all of these are the security of them, all of them is predicated on being able to send reset codes to your email address. And if they have your email address, you know, you're in big trouble. Those are literally the keys to the kingdom.
Right, and we have to be proactive by doing things ourselves, and you've suggested what some of those things might be. But I wonder if companies are also doing things, like, for example, if you deal with an insurance company that might email you your car insurance documents and stuff like that, do you think that companies have a responsibility, too, to stop necessarily contacting people through a Yahoo email address that might be compromised? Or indeed any company that might be compromised in the future?
No, look, I wouldn't, in that sense, I mean, I've said what I think Yahoo users should do. In terms of companies that communicate with their clientele by email, I don't think there's any need to single out Yahoo in that respect. The difficulty is each and every one of those companies will at some point be hacked. For the most part, we don't hear about it, and I've set up techniques to actually monitor which companies get hacked, and I can tell you that there are many more hacked than admit to it. And therefore, we have to, as savvy consumers and savvy citizens, we have to work on the assumption that whatever information that we provide will at some point be hacked. And if that company has been careless, particularly in the way that they've stored it, if they haven't encrypted that information, if they haven't scrambled it, if they've stored it in what's called the clear, i.e. unscrambled, then there is a big problem. So, you know, you've got to just be a bit savvy about this. Don't provide information you don't need to. So, for example, if you're on the website of a retailer and for convenience they give you the option of having your card details stored on their computer so you don't have to re-enter it every time you buy something, don't do that. Okay, consider using payment methods, other payment methods such as PayPal or Apple Pay or something, because with those systems, the vendor doesn't get your full payment details. So even if they do get hacked, they don't have your details. if it's not something, you know, terribly important where, for example, your date of birth is critical. So, you know, obviously, if you're buying a property or something and you're doing something relating to that online, it's a legal document, you have to give it. Often, giving slightly incorrect date of birth data or slightly misspelt name or something like that, it may be against the terms of service of the website, but it's usually not illegal. And therefore, you know, I would say, you know, just think intelligently about what data you are prepared to share. The other thing is, use a password manager so that you create a unique password for each website account that you create. So you'll have a different password for Amazon than from your bank, than from your credit card company. And the reason why that's important is if they do get hacked, that combination of email address and password will not have been used anywhere else, so they can't then use that to break into the other services that you may have got. So you have to be a bit savvy and sometimes even bend the rules a bit about what you provide. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, where, you know, if a medical insurance company says, you know, we'd like to have your card details on file, I said, no, you can't have them, and this is why. And, you know, if you don't like it, go away. Mm-hmm. And most companies will be understanding of them.
And indeed, a lot of companies will ask you for your date of birth quite routinely. I don't give it. And that's not just through vanity. It's just because I don't want to hand over a smorgasbord of information that would allow somebody, you know, and we're not saying the people phoning me up from whichever company it might be would be using those fraudulently, but somebody else might. And I don't want to give them an identikit picture of me to go away and use somewhere else. So I'm very, very cautious now. But the point now, we've only got a minute or two in this segment, very, very important in 2016. The problem is, as we've said before when we've been on the radio, Fevzi, the bad guys are getting smarter. And they're getting smarter than the good guys. That is an enormous worry. It's only a matter of time, it would seem to me, that maybe in 2017 we're going to see a bank taken down in this way.
Inevitably, and you know, banks are notorious for not informing people when they're hacked. I mean, the rules are being toughened on this, I have to say, but historically they haven't always told us when they've been hacked, and it's a big problem. But I would also now that the government has finally managed to get the RIPA legislation, Regulatory Investigatory Powers Act regulations through, these are regs that make sure that internet service providers have a complete record of all the websites and services that we've accessed in the last year. Now that's for, you know, anti-terrorism and so forth, ostensibly, but it also means that, God, my goodness, when their computers get hacked, they're going to know everything about us.
Right. Yeah, that could be the guys from Ofcom or the Metropolitan Police or anybody at your doorbell, but
Fevzi. Yes,
Do you want to go and answer it and find out what it is?
It'd be fine, don't worry.
It's okay, because we've got to take a break now anyway. Fevzi Turkart, the gadget detective. We're looking into some of the scary stuff and some of the good stuff about 2016 and ahead into 2017 here on The Unexplained with me, Howard Hughes, at the one and only Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Unexplained New Year Special with Howard Hughes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Ah, yes, it's the Unexplained New Year's Day Special. My name is Howard Hughes, and we're doing something slightly different on this edition of The Unexplained. Hope you're enjoying it wherever you are, and I hope you had a good festive period too, as they call it these days. Fevzi Turkart, gadget detective, is here. Fevzi, just before we close out on cybersecurity, we talked about the Yahoo hack, and you said that various companies that you were aware of had been hacked, and not all of them go public about that, about which I am a little concerned to hear. Let's just talk about one thing that's been a topic of interest and concern during the year of 2016, and that's ransomware. I keep hearing about people receiving this, and it sounds to me as if the people doing the ransomware are again getting more and more sophisticated.
Yeah, and the ransomware is getting really quite nasty, and some of it now uses a form of social engineering, and I'll explain what I mean by that. But first of all, ransomware is a name given to a category of an infection that can affect your computer or other device that scrambles, infects your computer, and without you knowing it, scrambles or encrypts all your data. And by all your data, I mean everything, all your photos, all your documents, that manuscript you've been working on for 15 years but haven't quite finished, everything, including any drives that are attached to that computer, and in some cases the backups to the cloud as well. So you really It's really quite nasty. And the way that it works, and the reason why it's called ransomware, is once it's all encrypted and you no longer have access to it, it puts up a message and extorts money from you. It will basically say, you know, if you want your stuff back, we've got it, it's all on your computer, but it's encrypted. If you want the keys to unlock it and unscramble it, then you will have to pay a sum of money, which is normally expressed in bitcoins, which is a digital currency which is harder to trace, hence why it's used, and that will normally run into, you know, several hundred pounds. That is pretty disgusting, and there are cases of even, you know, American police departments of paying ransoms to get their data back. The only real protection about against this, in addition to running all your standard, you know, antivirus and all of that, the real protection is to have up-to-date backups that are stored on an external device, only connected for the duration of the backup, and then disconnected and stored elsewhere, so that even if you get everything scrambled, if you've got a recent backup, you can roll back to that. Mm. One very disgusting trend, I have to say, in all of this, is now that there is a new form of ransomware where instead of demanding a ransom from you, where you can pay a ransom, or you can infect a number of people that you know. And it's a bit like pyramid selling, you know, that the idea is that, okay, if you give us three new victims, we'll release you. That sort of idea, and that's really quite, you know, I mean, any sort of extortion.
Well, I mean, number one, that's despicable, and number two, if anybody did that, they would then be complicit, wouldn't they?
Well, yes. I mean, I mean, without rendering a legal opinion, you would think so. Yes, even though they were actually.
Yes, I'm sorry, folks. I know you're not Judge Rinder, but
no, I can't dance nearly as well.
That's not what I heard.
But despite acting under duress, yes, I'd say you could be held complicit. But that's just really, that's just gross. And that's kind of, that's what I meant by social engineering, this idea that we can actually appeal or use the worst parts of people's nature to propagate this.
And the problem is that the bad guys are very sophisticated, and many of them have been working at this for many, many years. We had, I don't know if you've heard of this guy, but there's a famous hacktivist, somebody who is a reformed hacker. His name is Greg Hausch. Mm. We had him on this show, 5 months or so ago. Fascinating story, because he started getting into all of this cyber dodgy stuff when he was a kid. Yeah, yes. Like most of these people do, you know, you got to start learning this stuff young. And he ended up in the can, as the Americans say, in prison, as we say, and learned his lesson and was able to build a life for himself on the outside. But, you know, he made it all sound incredibly simple. And the problem is that these people who do these things, wherever they are, and that's a whole other issue, are getting more and more sophisticated. And we're just poor people being increasingly... Yeah. I won't say suckered, but encouraged to use more and more online methods of doing everything.
Yeah, and that's, by the way, why eventually we will be pushed away from having our data on our devices locally to having it in the cloud. In
not
the hope,
what, because somebody else's security is likely to be better.
In the idea that you know, when you buy into one of these services, part of what they offer you is at least a fighting chance, because quite frankly, it's increasingly difficult for us. And the problem is, things like ransomware, which are, you know, a relatively new phenomenon, just really a couple of years now, but huge spike in the numbers of infections, but also a huge spike in the amount of money they're getting in. The thing is, ransomware works, and they've got huge budgets which they're reinvesting as business people back into their horrible products.
So what's the likes of Interpol doing then? Because if they're making loads of money, then surely, you know, the old American phrase, follow the money, surely you can find them by following the money.
And some of them are found and some of them are shut down, but the thing is, you know, this stuff propagates, you know, that you don't have to be a genius anymore to go into this business. I mean, at the very sort of basic end, there are what are called script kiddies, which are, you know, typified as teenagers who can just buy a set of online tools for a few dollars and start infecting people. You know, they don't have to be evil geniuses that have been hacking since childhood. They just have to have that intent.
Well, we both know we're going to see more of this in 2017. Let's look on the upside of technology, though. One of our guests during this last year is a man called Kevin Warwick. He is one of the people at the cutting edge of robotics and artificial intelligence in
the UK. Captain Cyborg.
Captain Cyborg, the man who's had not one but two chips implanted in himself just to show that it can be done. A remarkable man, and I'll rerun the interview with him at some point because he was fascinating. Lovely guy. But, you know, whether you like it or not, robotics and artificial intelligence are going to be part of our lives in this new year. You know, it is inescapable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we start seeing it with, you know, we'll come to some of the gadgets, but things like the Amazon Echo, for example, which is this this AI device, this artificial intelligence device that sits in your room. It's got seven microphones built into it, so you can speak to it.
This is Alexa,
anywhere.
Isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So we can just say, Alexa, hello.
Hello.
There we go.
You've still got it. We did. Fepsi and I did this on the radio a few months ago somewhere else. But, I mean, it's a remark. You can you say to Alexa something like, find me a hit by the Doobie Brothers?
Alexa, play music by the Doobie Brothers.
Shuffling songs by the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, yes.
Alexa, stop.
Now, you know, she is just like a lot of these radio stations that have a database of 100 songs. And when you go to Doobie Brothers, they probably got two songs. And the first one is Listen to the Music. She's exactly like them.
Yeah, but she gets quite clever. So you've shown that you can ask for, you know, songs by title. But, for example, Alexa, play that song that goes, you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave.
Hotel California.
Oh, yes.
Alexa, stop. And that's not a setup, and I hadn't tried that before, so I was taking a chance that she'd get it, but she's pretty bright. She can also rap. Alexa, rap.
My name is Alexa, and I'm here to say, I'm the baddest AI in the cloud today. Your responses are fast, but mine are faster. Sucker speech engines, they call me master.
I think it's probably time I packed in this radio game because she's going to take over. I've been asked by Ed, my technical producer on this show tonight, to ask you to ask Alexa. It's like a couple having an argument, isn't it? Can you ask your partner to pass the salt? Can you ask Alexa who you're going to call?
Alexa, who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
There we go.
No, that's fantastic. Look, that's a great party trick. And, you know, you could take her to the pub quiz. Where is all of this going in this new year?
So this is another step towards personal assistants being more ubiquitous. So we've had them in our smartphones for a while. But to have a device in the room that you can speak to as a person, you don't have to pick up a remote control or smartphone or anything like that. And Alexa, oh, I shouldn't have said that. She's woken up. I'll just switch her off. You can plug her into, there's thousands of services that you can take advantage of. So you can order food. You can say, Alexa, remind me to wash the car tomorrow.
Wash the car, add it to your to-do list.
Okay, there we go. Alexa, I need to buy some pizzas.
Voice ordering and my deals are exclusively available only if you enable voice shopping. Would you like me to add pizzas to Phoebe's Amazon basket instead?
She called you Phoebe.
Yeah, she does. She's so smart, but she can't say my name. But there we go.
Okay. Add it to Phoebe's basket.
Okay, well, don't just rub it in, will you? Come on.
My name is Phoebe, and don't you forget it, Alexa.
Alexa, tell me a joke.
Knock, knock. Who's there? Mikey. Mikey who? Mikey doesn't fit in the keyhole.
Oh!
Terrible. I'm sorry. I apologise.
Eat your heart out, Tony Blackburn.
Anyway, but the point is, you get traffic information, you get weather. Alexa, set my alarm for 6:50 a.m. tomorrow.
Alarm set for 6:50 a.m. tomorrow.
Alexa, read my Audible book.
Getting your book from Audible. Resuming Career of Evil. There's 12 minutes left in the chapter. And 7 hours, 9 minutes left in the book.
I'm so sorry, said Robin. catching sight of two times and halting abruptly.
Alexa, stop.
I have to have one of these. Now, look.
So that's great for a bedroom. It's great for a kitchen.
Okay.
You know, where you don't necessarily want to use a finger interface. Okay, so that's Alexa. That's an example of artificial intelligence. And that's, you know, starting to be useful now. But as this goes, really, you know, it will be a game changer. These things will take off.
And are we going to see, and we've only got 60 seconds of this segment left, do you think we're going to see more self-driving vehicles on our roads?
Yeah, I do. Again, it's inevitable. All the components are there now. The legal framework is probably the biggest barrier at the moment. We have to decide if a self-driving vehicle has an accident, who is responsible legally, and how does the insurance handle it, that sort of thing. But yes, inevitably we will see it, and there'll be some difficult programming decisions about, you know, if a car needs to swerve to avoid a major accident, but it needs to kill a pedestrian in the process, you know, what decisions should the machine make? And these are very difficult decisions. But yes, the short answer is we'll see this. They will take over eventually.
One final thing in just a few seconds. I wonder if this works. Can you ask Alexa, which podcast does Howard Hughes present?
I think we're pushing our luck, but I would try. Okay. Alexa, which podcast does Howard Hughes present?
You'd like to play the program called Since Howard Hughes Present. Right?
Oh, well.
No.
She's not perfect, no. Then. She and I need to have a little talk. Or, in other words, knock, knock, who's there? Alexa? Alexa who? That's showbiz. Shpevzi Turkup is the Gadget Detective at GadgetDetective.com. We're back in just a moment, right here at Talk Radio across the UK, this show called The Unexplained.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Unexplained New Year Special with Howard Hughes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Yes, The Unexplained. It is New Year's Day and it is incredibly... How did we arrive at 2017? I know it's the year after 2016. It's just... I'm going to be signing checks. Yes, I still write checks. With 2016 for at least another 3 months. Life is just spinning away. Fevzi Turkup, the Gadget Detective, is here. Now the fun bit in our final segment, Fevzi. You are great, and I know that you do this on your website, but you are great at picking fab gadgets. So I'm going to let you go through your list of as many fab gadgets as we could do. We've done Alexa, and we can move on from that. One of them that caught my eye during this year is the Parrot Pot. What is the Parrot Pot? For those of the uninitiated, I know, but for the uninitiated, what's the Parrot Pot?
So it's an example of Internet of Things. You will have heard of Internet of Things. These are devices that live in our homes with us, but traditionally are not very smart. Now they become smart. That includes a flower pot, in this case, the Parrot Pot. It's a device that is internet connected. It's a flower pot that's internet connected that monitors the condition of the soil that the plant is in, and it allows you to monitor it. So when you go away, it includes a self-watering system. So when the plant needs watering, the pot knows that it needs watering and it waters the plant, and it can do so for several weeks without any human intervention.
That's cool. Is it using biofeedback from the plant itself?
Yeah. So it's measuring aspects of the soil and so forth to determine that the soil's dry, it needs watering. It is smart, and it's a good example. So we know about things like internet connected thermostats and so forth. So this is an extension of that idea. Your lighting, your thermostat, your door locks, your alarm system, everything is going to be internet connected. Very, very convenient. Not very secure. I mean, this is a reasonably secure device, but you need to make sure that you've got the security aspect down pat as well, which often means the ideal way of doing that is to have a separate network for the devices, so they don't share a network with your PC and phone and tablet and all of that sort of thing. So that's the Parrot Pot. It's $129.99 is the list price.
Now, that's the problem, isn't it? Because if you want the high time, for some people that will be a mere bagatelle. For me, that would be a lot of money. £3 to buy your plant pot.
Sorry. Yeah, but there are plants that are worth more than that as well, so it depends
what
you put into that. Moving on, we've got the Fitbit Blaze.
Now this is interesting because there are more and more devices, and you've told me over this year about some of them, that interface with us.
Yeah, so this is a fitness tracker, so it does the normal things like steps, distance, active minutes, calories burned. It allows, it's smart enough to know when you're doing different types of activities and keeping them separate. It also will monitor your sleep patterns as well. And unlike, say, a smartwatch like, say, the Apple Watch, which will barely give you one day on a charge, this will give you something like 5 days. And that makes a big difference because sleep monitoring only works if you don't have to take it off and charge it overnight. It works best if you're actually wearing it overnight. So you know, there is a benefit in having this longer life. And it's quite interesting that the devices like the Fitbits, which are sort of market leaders in these fitness trackers, have done particularly well by doing sort of specializing in one thing and doing it well. Whereas Apple, when it launched the Apple Watch, said, yeah, it does this, it's an adjunct to your smartphone and that. But interestingly, with the launch of Apple Watch 2, they're trying to market it and focus it far more as a fitness gadget because they can see that's a growth area. So the growth areas we will continue to see are fitness monitors, such as these Fitbits, but also health monitors, things that can detect our health and monitor our health in ways that we don't even realize. So that there are already apps running on your smartphone that can detect the early signs of Parkinson's disease from the tremor in one's voice and the slight tremor in one's hand. And by tremor, I mean that which is imperceptible to the human eye or ear, but a computer program built into your smartphone. It has the gyroscope, it has all the technology required to sense quivers, as it were, and it can tell you, you know what, maybe you need to go and speak to a doctor. It doesn't diagnose you, but it can mean you can get a diagnosis much earlier, and also people with things like heart conditions and so forth can be monitored, you know, every day, instead of just going to the doctor every 6 months. You know, if there's a problem, your doctor can be informed straight away. So that's the Fitbit Blaze, £149.
One of the things that you told me about that I'd like to get into is the increasing trend for us to be equipped with cameras. James Whale on Talk Radio just before Christmas was talking about his experience with a cyclist, and James had a conversation, let's call it this, with a cyclist when he was on the road, and the cyclist said, you know that I'm recording this video. So, you know, James concluded his conversation with this man in a way that only James can. And that video file exists somewhere. And what I'm getting round to is that cameras of various kinds, dash cams, whatever they might be, are getting smaller, faster, cheaper, better. And they're going to be in and around everything, seems to me.
Yeah, they are increasingly, and you've got it absolutely right. You've got cameras that are very, very cheap, that are increasingly connected, so that they can upload the thing. And dash cams, I mean, I chose one called the Transcend Drive Pro 200, which is a dash cam. It's a camera that sits on your dashboard, looks out the window, and it is because there are these miscreants doing things like, you know, crash for cash and flash for cash. Flash for cash. You know about these things where someone flashes you to go, you go, they then drive into you, you didn't have right of way, they deny ever having flashed you, your insurance company pays out. Equally, you know, they shunt you, they reverse into you, claim you went into the back of them. This device, in addition to doing the basics, number one, has a really good camera on it, so it's got very sharp, high-resolution cameras, so it will pick out things like number plates more easily. The second thing is it's got a GPS system, so it can imprint upon the footage exactly where you were, what speed you were doing, because the GPS can work that out, and even which lane you were in. So your movements are up to that point. So it's got some clever tricks. It also does something called forward collision warning system. So if you get too close to the car in front, it can warn you. If you tend to veer out of your lane for any reason,
but it won't stop the car, though, will it?
No. But interestingly, this is one of the components that go into making self-driving vehicles, isn't it? So the vehicle should have an awareness of where it is and in relation to the road and other vehicles, and that's part of it. But what it obviously doesn't have is the ability to control the vehicle, but that's a key component. So things like sat nav, that's another key component. A self-driving car has to be able to get you from A to B. The component of cars that does parallel parking for you. So all these bits that have been sort of add-ons to our own driving, when combined, form a self-piloting vehicle.
Okay. We'll talk about one more gadget, and then I want to talk about something else to close this out. And Fevzi Turkup, thank you very much for being good enough to do this and to give up part of your New Year's Day. I know you're a fan of stuff made by... there are many other devices like this, but there's a company called Kitsound. I've got one of their speakers that uses Bluetooth. And I know you're quite keen on sort of multi-room speaker systems and that sort of stuff. And I was always very sceptical about them because I always think they degrade the audio quality. But as you've been trying to tell me this year, they are getting better and better.
They are getting better and better and cheaper and cheaper. So there have been things like Sonos products, which are very high-end aspirational speaker systems. So you can put them all over the house and you can use them in different ways. So you can have the same music playing in perfect sync as you go from room to room, connected wirelessly, or you can, you know, have different things going on in different rooms. Now, the problem with that has been very expensive. And for those of us that have been kicking around for a few years, we've probably, you know, collected a fair bit of audio equipment from that hi-fi stack to the mini system all the way through. And these things often have good amps and good speakers built into them, but they're just not smart. They're not internet connected. So Kitsound have done this device called the Link, and it's about £70. I think you can get it for a bit less. I think list price is £70. Get it for about £60, I think. And you connect it to a dumb device, any speaker with an amplifier that has an audio input on it. You can do that, and it automatically becomes a smart device, which you can then access via your smartphone, which you can synchronize across the different rooms. So in other words, you can build a Sonos type system that would typically run into many thousands of pounds, and I don't exaggerate when I say that to you, by using existing kit that you have in your home. And that, I think, is really good, because although a lot of smart systems are smart, sometimes we sort of give up some of the quality. Now, you know, some manufacturers, I won't name them, but they produce stuff that's high in features but not high in quality, you know. And that's a trend we've been going down. You know, you think of the iPod gives you plenty of songs. It doesn't give you the songs in the highest possible fidelity, but if you've got existing hi-fi and speakers and even, you know, modern stuff, you can just hook all this stuff up and link it all together using these Kitsound Link devices. And as I say,
and still keep stuff that is warm, functioning and familiar to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all good. One for last thing to ask you about, and this is basically a question for looking into 2017, and it's, I guess, if you were categorizing it would be an is this the way things are going, Fevzi, kind of question. There was a conference in London just before Christmas, a few days before Christmas, with experts from all around the world, about robotics and sex robots.
Yes.
These being the next big thing. And some very serious scientists were here in London saying, yes, this is the way forward. Now, I'm not sure what to think about this, because there are people who make moral objections to this, saying that it dissociates people from reality and all the rest of it. And I'm sure there are a million arguments about that. But the question for you in our dying seconds is, do you think this is the way things are going?
Yeah, I think inevitably it is. I mean, sex and so forth is one of the major drivers for technological innovation. And you look at the way that we use, you know, camcorders, you know, Cine 8 film and all the rest of it. You know, people were using them for porn, and effectively, in its most basic form, you could say that this is a form of interactive pornography.
And, you know,
but it will advance beyond that, by the way. People will not just have sex with devices, they will have relationships with them.
Wow. And there was a Channel 4 series, I think, in this last year about exactly that. What a fascinating thought, if controversial. Fevzi Turkup, thank you very much indeed. If people want to know about you, I know they can go to your website, gadgetdetective.com, and connect with you there, Fevzi. It only remains for me to say, Fevzi, thank you for being my friend across 2016 and for helping me out on so many occasions. And I wish you a great 2017, Fevzi.
Absolute pleasure. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Fevzi. This is the Unexplained Talk Radio.